Are you looking to expand your mind? Do you like to challenge and be challenged? Looking to improve yourself and share your experiences professionally and personally? You're in the right place. Welcome to Scoutcast, Roasting Marshmallows, with your host, Rolf Sird.
All right, and we are live. Welcome to another episode of Scoutcast. My name is Rolf Sird, and I'll be your host. So there are a lot of things that can and frequently do go wrong inside of a business. Sales fall through, products don't work, team members get frustrated, and you know, clients can get upset. Often these things happen due to a single reason: lack of organizational clarity. Organizational clarity can be achieved by having everyone in your organization, from the cleaning staff to the CEO, from the board of directors to the customer care team, on the same page and talking the same language. Do your people know what business your company really is into? What is it that you do, actually? And maybe who does what? The answers of them might scare you. So today we are roasting marshmallows with Michiel Toes, COO of NetEase. And as of the end of this month, 31st of March, he is CEO. So congratulations already, Michiel Toes, on that
thank you.
Promotion, I would say, I guess. And so, NetEase is a leading software vendor in network automation, and we will find out how he is uplifting the internal organization of his company. So it is the mission of NetEase to help customers optimize and automate any process related to designing, building, deploying, and validating networks to improve standardization, time to market, compliance, innovation, collaboration, and cost reduction. So Michiel here is an experienced entrepreneur with a proven track record in scaling companies to the next level. He's driven by a desire to inspire and develop others, and his focus is on innovation and always finding new ways to exceed customers' expectations. And what sets Michiel apart is his people-first, highly customer-focused mindset and strategic strength. And when Michiel is not working, he loves to spend time exploring the seas on his sailboat. Man, it's a big introduction. I think you have the biggest introduction so far, Michiel.
So, I'm impressed.
Yeah,
I think we're done now.
Thumbs up, man. Huh?
That might say so much about our podcast than about Michiel.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the first time we have a CEO on the podcast, right?
So I decided. Besides Sylvester, I guess.
Yeah, but does. Okay, he counts, right? Yeah, sure, of course. So,
Patrick.
Sorry?
Said Patrick, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course, Patrick. Yeah, okay. So you're the third already, man. Yeah. Okay.
Third time right?
Exactly. Third time's the charm.
Yeah.
All right. So what does organizational clarity mean to you? Like, let's just jump straight to the chase.
Let's not say that thing. He can punch his ear. It's okay.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, you guys are part of the furniture, right? So Michiel of Enhik and Panche, welcome to the podcast as well. Always glad to have you here. I don't know what I would do without you guys.
I'm always glad to be here, Rolf.
Yeah, nice. Punchy, I like your background, man. It's
it's a refreshing,
well,
man.
Yeah. Very good, very good.
Strategically chosen for the day.
Yeah. So, yeah, organizational clarity or navigating the organizational clutter. It's might be an abstract topic for a lot of people, but Michiel, maybe you could start out by explaining to us what it means to you?
Yeah, of course. Well, first of all, I had to Google it because, organizational clarity. And I think what you were saying is right. It's about, you know, everyone in the organization, understanding what it is all about. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a big topic, but it's also a very very broad topic about where do you start, why do you want to do this, and I'm always intrigued when you have organization or teams and you have like two organizations that both have 10 people, 50 people, and one is really exceeding all expectation, and the other one is just moving on. And I'm always curious, what is this difference? And I think it has to do with organizational clarity, that it's in one team, everyone knows why they're there, what they want to achieve. Right? They're working towards a goal and everyone is involved. And the other one is just, moving on and doing their stuff. And, mm-hmm.
Do you have another name for organizational clarity or like a synonym for this, or is just...
I don't know. There's probably a lot of things here. It has to do with strategy. It has to do with teamwork. I I think these are, you know, important things, and the desire to improve, I think, you know, to always, how can we do things better, and to exceed. Yeah, I think it's I don't know, how do you guys see this? Because it's a broad topic.
I think you mentioned it quite well, but it's like difficult to define what exactly organizational clarity is. So maybe we can define the problem maybe easier. So like, that's why I kind of like the name of organizational clutter, which is, in my experience, organizations or periods in organizations where it's like not really clear what the organization is doing, what the organization is trying to achieve, what strategy it has, how it's going to position itself on the markets. People don't really know what their roles or responsibilities are. People are, maybe there is a lack of accountability within the organization, and nobody really seems to be taking the initiative to, well, clean this up or to move the organization in one direction. Mm-hmm. So for me, that will be like the clutter. And the idea is like, okay, how do you address this? And how do you deal with this? And who should be dealing with this?
Yeah. Well, I like that, because I think it's also about how our school work on the foundation. Right? It's like a foundation that needs to be okay, set up, before you can do like a next step.
Correct.
Like I said, get rid of the clutter so that you can move on.
Yeah, because I always think about, sometimes I make analogies with military. I've never been to the army, but I realized lately I've been quite reading a lot of books by people who have been in the armies or led armies. And it's, you can have the best fighters or the best soldiers, but if it's not really clear to them what their task is, what their mission is, what they need to achieve, or there is no direct, well, maybe in military terms, like chain of command, then their work becomes a lot easier, and they become, instead of them achieving their mission, they can become easily the target themselves. So that analogy kind of translates.
I think that's reminded me of this story. I don't know how true it is. It was like when I think the president from US, John Kennedy, went to NASA in the 1960s, and then he basically introduced himself to like a janitor, and then said, "Hey, I'm the president." And then, "Who are you?" And he's like, "Well, I'm the janitor, and I'm here helping put a man in the moon," right? It's like everybody is around the mission of putting something, doing something, and everybody do that in their own specific role and position. Yeah. I actually like that shot a lot. I hope it's true.
Well, I have been in the army. It's mandatory in Holland, and I've been a reserve officer.
Oh, nice.
And I think also there it was, I don't know how true this is. It's very generic, where, you know, in Holland, the army, it's, of course, there's this hierarchy, but, you know, I think in Holland, we're quite open. So it's not like if you say something, someone will do it. It's, we will first have a discussion. But they always said, because they were like higher performance, because you use all the knowledge in your team, even in the army. Where the analogy is, where different countries where there's more, you know, top down. If you shoot the top guy, then it falls down. I don't know how true this is, but I think there is something in that. You know, how to use all your resources in the best way. Yeah. And I don't believe it's completely top down. It's also, you know, get everyone involved and.
Well, I think that there has been a lot of historical developments. On this topic, I've been actually listening for the last few weeks a historical podcast it's called Kings of Kings by Dan Carlins. So he actually talks about the expansion of the armies like in the Middle East in 500 BC, for instance, and like, let's say, the Persians. And that's exactly there was happening then, because that's how they were trained. And as soon as you get rid of their general or their, well, king or whatever, like the whole thing disintegrates. And it's been this evolution, well, in business as well, but also in armies, but then also in business, where it's gotten more decentralized because people have seen that this model doesn't really work. So I would hope that it's like the way you describe it. It's you have room for discussion. It's not purely top down.
Yeah. So what if we go to like, okay, the king goes and then the whole army scatters up, like if we take that analogy back to a company, for example, when, I don't know, Steve Jobs, you know, passes away. And I mean, Apple didn't really, I mean, it might not be as good as it was with Steve Jobs, but do you think now that with Steve being gone, that the organizational clarity or any top CEO being gone, the organizational clarity or the clutter is increasing by default?
Well, I think, you know, especially with Steve Jobs, he's a very visionary guy. Mm-hmm. So, okay, it's very sad, but he dies, but his vision is still there in the company. And I think that is, you know, if you can achieve that, mm-hmm. Because I think it should not depend on one single person.
Right.
This is about the company, the team, and, you know, it's about everyone.
Yeah.
So if you have really this clarity, this clutter, then if someone is not there, everyone knows what to do. So I think that, yeah. And the same, I think, you know, with other companies, you know, they move mm-hmm. on. And I think it's more like a cultural thing than on just individual persons.
So basically that's when you actually did your job right.
Yeah.
I think so. And I think this is all about, you know, also the role of a leader. It's about getting the whole team to you know, take more responsibility. And it's not about you. It's about everyone, you know, achieving something bigger.
Actually causes organizational clutter? Like what causes, you know, companies to get, I don't know, like lost in the fog or however you want to call it. Like, is there some sort of negative spiral or some negative patterns that you can recognize that says like, you know, this is the path to, well, organizational clutter, fog, however you want to call it?
Well, I think it's number one. What I see is when, you know, usually, and I'm more in like, startup scale-ups. Huh? So what you see is that you have bright guys with an idea, and they start, and it's you know, they build something nice, but you get to the next phase, which is then, you know, it's not about the generals, it's about the team, and this is usually a phase where if you're an expert, it doesn't mean that you're good at, you know, delegation or setting up an organization to these type of things. So I think that's quite natural where you see like a scale up, it's hard to get to the next phase. Yeah. And this is also, and I've seen that in my previous company, I worked with, you know, big companies like Splunk, and we were part of their journey, how they grew. And you see every so often, like a generation, you see a new leadership team because they're used to, you know, the new challenges and they have the experience to move on. I think that's, and this is also, you know, I had my own company before this for 20 years, and it took quite long because we tried to do everything ourselves. And I think that's a big lesson. And that's also, you know, why we have the discussion. You guys are helping us out in our company. If you want to do everything yourself, it takes longer. And, you know, you go to all the pitfalls and these type of things. And I think the other one is probably on a personal level, you know, if you don't grow with the company yourself, you get stuck.
Yeah.
And if you get stuck, you know, it's usually you get bored or it's too much and you get, I don't know, things like burnout or less motivation. So I think it's always how do you develop yourself all the time to grow with the company.
And I guess in the position that you are, right? Or let's say if you are on this, maybe we should also discuss about what a COO means or CEO, right? But like if you are in those position and you got stuck in life, you also stuck your own company, right? And your own people working together. So I totally agree with this idea that if you are, the company is growing and you are not growing with it, that means you are basically holding the company back. And that's quite interesting idea, I think.
Yeah, like a nice example. So one of the things in quite early on, I have a technical background, university, electrical engineering, then and started a company. So I was CEO or managing director. And it's all new. Huh? It's small. So I did like a mini MBA at Nairobi University. And there were strategy and marketing. And then there was this block about organization. And I thought, well, finally, and now I'm going to know how to organize organization. Yeah, about, I thought it was about org charts.
Yeah.
And this whole block, nothing about org charts. The whole block was about yourself.
Oh,
nothing about structures, organization. And it's and they said, okay, how can you manage or lead an organization if you can't manage or lead yourself? No. So this whole block was about yourself.
So that made you change the way how you look at organizations or...
I don't know. I mean, you learn, and this is everything. It goes away, and then you have to do something new again. Mm-hmm. So it's constant. And this is, I think, also the challenge with it, with a small organization. You also have to do a lot of operational work. Yeah. And so, you know, then you forget about yourself and developing yourself, and I forgot to work on this. So and then I think you should every year you should do something. You know, like a training or good books or whatever.
Keep developing.
You touched on a lot of interesting points here, and I had like so many, I could spin off so many topics of discussion. But one that I think quite interesting is you mentioned most of your experience and the ways that you've done is, okay, worked with startups and then scale ups. And then now we talked, okay, that's also what you did as an entrepreneur. Do you think that you need different people, maybe different people with different proclivities at the start of an at the very start of an organization, and then later on maybe you need different types of characters of people who lead the organization once it gains the momentum and it becomes bigger?
Well, I think it's always good for a team to have different characters and different opinions. But I think quite normal, the people who start the company are usually the experts. And I think that one of the mistakes, and I made them myself as well, is usually you have a team, for instance, of technical guys. And what we mostly do is the best technical guy, we say, you become the manager.
Yeah.
But it's a completely different different role. Mm-hmm. And I think
and
in most cases...
And a horrible idea.
Yeah, but it happens all the time. I mean, best sales guys become sales manager, and you know, and this is, you know, it's logical for a small team because to hire a sales manager is quite expensive. So, and this is, I think, this is where you have to balance or navigate. Is okay? How can we still do this, and move on?
Yeah. Yeah, I think we had this in a recruitment podcast as well, right? Like you lose an awesome sales guy or an awesome developer and you gain a horrible manager. And it's definitely detrimental. It can be detrimental to your team. And so what I wanted to ask as well is like, you know, when a company is in this state of organizational clutter, in this state of like, you know, not everyone being super clear on what the organization does, but I think there are also people that are actually comfortable being in such a position, right? They go to their jobs in the morning, they do their thing, they come home, they collect their paycheck. Like they might they might not even need you know, organizational clarity.
Yeah, I think it's they think they don't need it, or they just they don't know better. Right? I mean, I can imagine that these people would actually thrive more once they actually have a clarity towards what they need to do and where.
You don't think they'll be like repressive or like aversive to the change?
Oh yes, there will be for sure. Everyone, like people are change averse by nature, right? So nobody really wants to, because it's a process of figuring out what is wrong with the current state, and then, you know, going into the efforts to address that, and that it changes also you as a person. So it's an uncomfortable process. So people generally don't want to do that. But you have people who maybe on the short term are comfortable with what they are or with the jobs, and they say, okay, I've tried, I've done my best, I've got my head almost chopped off. You know, I'm just going to stick to the, lower my head and just like get the job done. I don't care. It's somebody else's responsibility. But that is, on a long run, it's suboptimal for anybody.
Yeah. I think, but the question is always why don't people want to change, why are people resistant? I think this is all the basis of teamwork. If people are not involved, then the first step is, okay, I'll resist the change. I think that that's one key issue. And I think the other one is there if there's no like sense of urgency, yeah, okay, why should I change?
Yeah.
So I think it's always crucial to communicate, okay, what is the sense of urgency? And I read in my previous company, we also had a phase where, you know, it was pretty critical and we had to make a change because the way we organized was not going to last. So, and we had some external help and we all got this book about Where Is My Cheese? About this, I think you guys know about this maze where, you know, this the mice are running to cheese and every day there's cheese, but it's coming less and less and less. So if there's no urgency because there's cheese, yeah, why should we change? But if it will go away, then you have to do something.
Amongst the teams themselves, that makes people not want to change? Like they don't trust the organization, they don't trust their teammates? Or is it not a trust issue, you think?
Well, I think it always, you know, starts with trust. You know, if there's no trust, you don't speak up. And if there's trust, you speak up. And if you can't speak up and people listen to you, you get involved. I think that's the order.
Correct.
And if you don't ask people, don't get people involved, then and you make changes, then okay, you know, what's the point?
Yeah. And I think you touch an interesting point as well, is on the fact that, like, when you mentioned, like, the most important thing is the why. I think a lot of organizations, when they lack on this clarity of the why they are doing those changes, right? And like, and I've been working for sometimes already these big multi-billion dollar companies, and they are like all the time initiating programs for changes and programs for that and change management for this. Mm-hmm. And then every time you talk to the teams, it's like, this is just another initiative, another work on my plate. They have no idea why this has happened, why they need to do this. Yeah. And then they actually focus very much on the implementations of things and not actually clarifying why they are doing this, you know? And I think this is indeed the most important part, is like, if people understand the why the company wants to do that, or let's say the management team wants to do that, things get much easier. And if they would definitely give the autonomy for them, they would probably figure out themselves how to actually do their job.
Yeah.
Or also explain to people how their lives individually become better because of this change.
Yeah. Or worse can also happen, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. But, or worse if it doesn't change.
Exactly.
Like, but so we're touching upon an interesting point here. Also, Hill, you mentioned like this sense of urgency, and I totally agree with you. Like, if you don't have that sense of urgency to change, like, yeah, what's your motivation then? But that the sense of urgency can be both positive and negative. And I mean, it's like, okay, positive in the sense of, oh, if we change this, this is what we're going to gain. But negative in the sense, oh, if we don't change, this is what we're going to lose. Do you think those both have utilities, or how do you motivate people to change? Do you use both approaches when want to rally people behind a goal or behind a?
Yeah, no, I think there's two like dynamics. One is more, hey, you want to move away from something, and the other one is you want to move towards something. And of course, with this dynamics, if you move away, it will become less urgent all the time, and then it will, you know, stop.
Yeah.
So I think in the beginning, this could be a very good reason, because hey, you can drop in this valley, or how do you call that, pit? So it's crisis. Hey? You have to move. If we don't, we won't survive. So that will work shortly. But I think it's more, you know, for the long term, it's okay, where do you want to move towards to? Yeah. Right? I think this is what you were saying. Because that is something, this is this like flag on the horizon. But it's also quite difficult. It's not something you say, okay, in a session of 2 days, okay, guys, now we know, and let's move. Or that's my experience.
It's not? Then we've done it wrong ourselves.
Okay. You guys have done it. In 2 days. You know, get the strategy.
No, it's a long process, and it's never done, right? Yeah. You always change it, because, like you say, you have the flag on the horizon, then you're, let's say, a month closer to that flag, and then you've got new information, and you need to readjust where the flag is. So it's like it never stays.
No, and so, you know, what we're doing now, and I quite like that, is that okay to say, okay, yeah, we want to move in that direction, but then for each quarter define, okay, what can we do this quarter? Yeah. And so less this year-long business plan, and then, you know, at the end, you know, it's everything was different. It's more, and it's probably, you know, because for me, also now in the organization, to have your own software development team is new to me. And there is, of course, this agility where, okay, you know, let's see what in sprints we can do. And I see this is also on the business level. It's more on, you can, I don't know, some people call it rocks. So what can we do this week to, you know, improve a little bit? And then next quarter, we'll see what the next biggest gain can be.
Yeah, no. So we heard about these rocks, and could you explain a bit more in detail what that is? And maybe you can give like an example of one or two concrete rocks that you guys have been doing or are doing.
Yeah, sure. So basically, when I started, I got the whole team together as part of building the team and getting people involved. And so we did 2 days of strategy, but I think mostly it was also about getting the team together and working together and understanding each other better and you know, working on okay, what is this, you know, this year the strategy, and you know, you have this methodology scaling up, which is about, okay, how can I scale up my company? And it's about, you know, not big business plans, but, you know, one page strategic plan, and in there it's about, okay, this is, you know, my mission, this is what I want to achieve, so what are the things I need to do. And then each quarter say, okay, and they call it a rock, which is something where it's not individual. It is for a team or the company. And so, for instance, an example, we wanted to improve on our messaging. And so what you usually see when you enter a company that's like a startup, it's very technical. It's very like, okay, I've got the greatest product, push that out. Instead of, you know, okay, what does the customer want to hear? What are their problems? What problems are you solving? So that's quite a big change. So we on our messaging, we had to, and presenting and our pitch and how we demonstrate. And this is like internal work. And then we said, let's make a rock of it. So Q4, our priority is fix this, fix some of these fundamentals. And then get the whole team involved, the people to achieve that. And then it's, you know, at the end of the quarter, it's like, okay, now we have something, you know, which is, we can use, and we still use every day. It's a huge step forward.
Managed one, like to, yeah, and so I had complete a rock, I guess the term is. Do you also then afterwards like validate or measure the impact that completing that rock has made for the company? Or is that not always possible?
I think it's, I think there's like two things. Of course, you have to always like a retrospective. Yes, I think I've heard from you guys as well. It's always look back, okay, what have we done and what's the impact of that? Don't think we have done that for, I don't agree, because what we do is each quarter with the whole team is basically look back in the quarter. Okay, what have we achieved? What did it do for us? And then we go move on, and with the team, we define the next quarter.
Right, yeah.
And so in there, you like review what has happened and what the progress is. But maybe even one step further is like you said, okay, did it bring what we thought it would bring?
Why the name rock?
I think, I don't know, I'm making it up now. I'm sure it's somewhere written, but I think it's probably, you can't, it's like a mountain, it's too big, and a rock is more sizable, I think.
So it's about climbing the rock or something. Is that the idea?
Yeah,
or?
I don't know.
Okay.
A mountain, you move a mountain with individual rocks. Yeah,
exactly. I think that's my. I would like to explain it like that, but but I think it's good because it's two things. You define the rock with the team because of the involvement.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you know you keep track of movement and you know want to, you know. And I think also the danger is with every team. You create too many rocks. Yeah, in the beginning.
Yeah, that was my follow-up in question. Like, I imagine you have a lot of rocks, right? And you want to move quite a lot because, again, an organization is a complex system. So
yeah,
how would you go about to actually prioritizing those or picking the ones that you actually... Do you guys have, like, a framework or something, or you just pick based on gut feelings? What was your strategy mostly?
Well, I think it starts with input. Then I usually say, hey, okay, I get from customers, but also from the team, is, okay, what should we continue doing? What should we stop doing? And what should we start doing? And so, like in the input.
Retro,
yeah. Yeah, like a retro. And the other one is, okay, what are the top three issues at this moment? And then, you know, can ask for the whole team. And then with this, we discuss that. And then based on that, you can say, okay, and this is why I think it's more agile, because then you define for the next quarter and you find out, okay, last quarter we did too many things. So let's this quarter do a bit less, because I think for a commercial organization, the danger is that you don't want to have too many big rocks, because then all operational work stops.
Yeah.
So it's always a balance between, okay, hey, keep, you know, doing, you know, your productive work, well, of course everything is productive, but that gets money in.
Yeah, the
and
operational
also improvement.
Yeah, the operational ongoing work, and then next to that, yeah, you have like projects for improvement.
Exactly.
So okay. We started in the beginning that your current role is COO, and then that's going to change in a couple of weeks. How is this change going to impact like your day-to-day work? Like, what is or the way you guys as an organization are working up on it? Is it going to influence it?
Yeah. But what is a COO, right?
We can start with
like
that.
Let's start with that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think a COO is Chief Operation Officer. So I think the terminology, you have the CEO who's more responsible for like strategy, and the CEO is the one who basically puts it into practice. So I think in a large organization, you see CEO is responsible for the whole operational process, which usually have for marketing, sales, projects. Development, I think in most cases is separate, but basically it's the operation. So he's responsible for the operation, that it's improving and basically doing effective. So I think that's a COO, the role of a COO. Of course, in a small team, I think it's, yeah, CEO, it's
overlaps. It's, yeah.
You know, because in a small team also for me, it's about, okay, you have your management and your strategy, which is, you know, working, and they always say work at the company or work within the company. And this is a challenge if you're a small team, because you have so many hats. Yeah. So also in my role, it's still operational. I think it's even three layers. It's involved in commercial projects myself, because you want to grow the company. It's about managing a team, and it's also about managing the organization. So I think my role from CEO to CEO is a bit less of the operational and a bit more, you know, hovering above the organization. And, you know, are we, and I always like to say, okay, we're here and we make a picture of, we double the organization. And then I see my role, okay, how can we go from situation A to B?
Yeah.
And does it change the course that you were plotting as a COO, now that you're a CEO, now all of a sudden maybe you have like a different opinion on certain things or a different strategy, or for your day to day, you just have a bunch more responsibilities, I can imagine.
Well, I think it's quite organic. I think the biggest challenge in here is, of course, where the founder and previous CEO says, yeah, let me focus on customers. This is where I'm good at. This is what I want to do. And I had the same with my previous company, where we also got a CEO in. And I think this is always a challenge for an organization, because we were growing like 40% each year. And how do you do both roles? It's impossible. Yeah. It's really impossible. Okay. And if you want to grow fast, you have to have someone that is working, you know, I don't know in English, at the organization, or you know, make sure the organization is grown. Yeah. And the other one is making sure we get all the business in so we can grow.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, going back to bringing the organizational clarity, because you mentioned something about, you know, you guys had like a 2-day retreat and then define a bunch of quarterly rocks. And I also talked to some of the guys, and they also said something about a personality test that you did in the very beginning. Yep. And most of them said that was actually a pretty cool way of, getting to know each other. I mean, they've been working together for a long time, but still they learned stuff about each other that they didn't know.
Yeah.
So what does that exactly mean? Or like, how do you do it? Like a personality test in a company?
Yeah, it's about, hey, you have a lot of tests in the with colors and Briggs Myers. There's lots of tests. And I've personally done all of them. So basically the last one, which is profile dynamics or management drives. And this is not four colors, it's seven colors, which is like your drives. And it says, hey, you have drives that you show, and you have resistance to, you know, certain colors. Huh? So yeah, if certain types of persons. And with this test, you can see what are the primary drives of people. And it's just good for people to understand, but also it's good for the team to understand, because why are two people working very well together and two other are having a difficult time? And usually because they, you know, these colors don't match. So I did it for individuals. And this is also about teamwork. You make some interesting exercises. Guess. So I put all the profiles on the wall. And you have to write who you think it is. And that's...
Did they get it right? Or was it...
It was very clear. Others, it was maybe even surprising. So,
I can see this is a very nice tool for, let's say, like, as you explained, right, like a team building activity and getting to know people. But I like, how do you, because I do see as a negative tool for like a management tool, right? Oh, I'm going to, let's say, promote this person or relocate this person to another position based on their, let's say, psychological tasks. Is that something that you agree or you guys agree? Because I found it a bit like sometimes, if I look, for example, for my sport team, right, everybody has a different personality. And the end of the day is they have to work together with their strengths of, let's say, technically or not. But I can imagine that can be, in my eyes, misused to be like, oh, yeah, you are not allowed to grow that because you are too analytical. And this requires more like of a people type of thing. And then I'm wondering, how do you see that?
Yeah, but I think, you know, the because when people read the report, it's like, and I gave a report to my wife, and he said, yes, that's you, definitely. So it is about clarity. But I think the biggest thing is about, you know, understanding each other. And like you said, a good teamwork starts with like trust. Is, you know, if you understand each other better, it's easier to work together. But I agree, of course, you can, you know, and it's an indication. If you go black and white, it's but this is about drives. This is something, if someone is really, I don't know, structured. So you can also use that, of course, to say, hey, maybe person is more suitable in a certain way. But also on the team. So we did it also on so if you add the profiles, you come to a team, you see you're lacking colors. And I think a good team has every color in it because every color has its value.
Yeah.
And if certain colors are missing, for instance, being result driven, and you miss it in your team, or structure, or more analytical or creativity.
Yeah.
Then if you hire new people, I think it's more about, growing the team than changing the team, because I don't think you can change individuals, but you can say, hey, I'm lacking something. Let's add that when I add a new person. I think that's much better.
So when talking about diversity in teams, that's like the kind of diversity you want to have, like diversity in skill sets and personalities.
Yeah. Not hire another Brazilian just because we want to be diverse.
But I think that, I don't know how you see, I think that's also the challenge we have in IT. There's not that many women in IT. And I think from a diversity perspective, that's, I think, crucial.
Yeah. Correct.
I agree. Totally agree.
I think something, maybe a question for you, because something you mentioned that I thought briefly now. Do you think that these test results are used to deny people chances for promotions or growth in certain organizations?
I had some experiences with that, yes, where I heard managers saying, yeah, but I did this test and this person is like this, and that means it's not good for this position. And they did not even consider it.
Also, maybe they
and
just
I think it's a misusing of the tool. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's an abuse of the tool, right?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I think that's of course risk. But I think that's with everything. You know, it's how people use things.
Yeah.
It's one input, but there's also others that you should still look at, of course.
Yeah. So I was going to ask something else. It's about like I used to work for this company, and you were like a sales guy, a sale type of person, right? It's your hobby. And I found it interesting that it was a big company, and basically when you joined, the owner would take you to sailing with them as part of like a bonding activity. Have you ever done that? Like taking your team for sailing? And because I can imagine can be, I never did it for whatever reason. I was not invited for the sailing. So it was, so I wonder, like, do you consider that to be a building trust team activity or more like forcing your hobby into people?
Or is this just your way of asking, can we go sailing as well?
Also. But in the summer, I don't do that in the winter.
No, I've always done that, you know, always, you know, when you get a new team, do something, you know, outside the company. And I love sailing and get people involved. And I think it's a good way. Then go sailing, go to an island, do a barbecue. And it's completely different. If you do something outside, you can do this with customers or whatever. And then Corona, of course, was quite challenging because it's still on the agenda to with the team go sailing. But hopefully we can do this soon.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's also why you do like that. That's more the motivation why you want to do sailing or any other hobby. And I think the bonding comes as a result. And maybe your goal is, I just want to, this is my passion, and this is like what I do. I want to introduce it to more people. And like, why not introduce it to the people that I spend most of my time with?
Yeah.
The outcome of that is it creates better bonds and people getting to know each other. So I think if you approach it from that perspective, is a lot better than if you're like, I'm going to do this just to build the team together, right? That's...
No, I also had it was like a sports club where my son was, and they asked me to go into one of the committees. And what you see also there is like, you have a person very knowledgeable and then other people, but, you know, there are no like roles. So this person is doing everything and the other one is just, I don't know, helping out. And I don't see this working, you know. So the first thing I did is, get together and get to know each other. Because, I think that's the basis. And so we did go sailing indeed, and we had a barbecue. And then the atmosphere is completely different after that. And then you can say, hey, you guys have to, you know, get more involved because you're also experts and get your responsibility, you know, spread out in the team.
So, like, do you think this behavior of yours or this idea that everything has to be as a team is something that you grew to learn? Is something that you read in a management book? Is something that you experienced it? Or is just something that you like? I like be around people. I like with teams. Because I've seen a lot of organizations that this is a totally different story, right? It's like, no. That's a top down. I don't really care about the team. And sometimes they survive very long. So like, how do you think it came to be for you?
It's a good question. Maybe the analogy with sailing, I'm not a solo sailor. You know, there's people that, so I cross the ocean and I basically did this not with my family. I did go away with my family for a year to the Caribbean and sailed back. But we decided not with young children to do this ocean crossing. So I said, so I invited like friends. And also in there, I looked more at people, how they are, than their sailing skills. Mm-hmm. So I had this also sales school that helped us out. So I had like three groups that sailed the boat for us or with me. And I know one of the guys, he was seasick. He was useless in sailing. He couldn't sail. And this... Yeah. So, and also the other one. So this sailing trainer, teacher, he would say, he told my wife, why is he taking this guy? And I said, I know this guy, because whatever happens, he will never, ever give up. And he was our cook on board, because I think it's crucial if you go sailing. I always say you have to sleep before you get tired. You have to eat before you get hungry. And you have to clothe yourself before you get cold. And eating is very crucial because you get a rhythm in the boat. So I like to have a cook. And he was the cook. And I can still see him, you know, when we are, because it's inside the boat, you have to do the cooking and you get green if you can't handle it. And I still see him coming out with a meal and we were like outside, hey, let's eat this. And then we said, ask him, do you want some? He said, oh, no, I'll wait. But I know he'd rather die than not do this. So, and yeah. I think this is because I saw the opposite effect when I was in the Caribbean. I saw ships coming in, and there was one ship, and there was one guy with his back on the side. And when they, you know, got into the landing slip, he got off. He tried to hit the skipper, and then he ran off. And I think this is for me always the analogy with a team. If you have a great team, it's an amazing adventure.
Yeah.
But if you have the wrong team, boat, they will say it's a number of feet. So if you have the not good team members, the boat will get smaller 1 foot per day.
Yeah.
And
I definitely agree with you on that. Yeah, that's a nice start.
So I'm always more focusing on the team members and the process, and the rest will come.
So what, when recruiting people also for the organization, what is it that you're maybe looking for? This is a nice analogy also for teams at work, right? What characteristics or abilities are you?
Well, I think, you know, it's about company values and personal values. They need to match. I think that's, of course, people have to have the right skills, but it's also about the right people. And the right people is about you have your personal values and they should match somehow the company values. Because if that, then people love to work for the company. And this is what I like about, you know, like more startups and scale-ups. There's a lot of passionate people in there.
Yeah.
Really good people. This is also the company NetEyes. It's, you know, it's a great team. And, you know, it's great to work with the team because they're really passionate. Usually you have to worry more that they do too much than too little.
Yeah. And then it's a total different problem, right? But it's a nice problem to have.
Yeah. So it's rather than you have to pull people, it's about, you know, a little bit keep people on track and you know, so that you as a company go in the right direction.
So
I think this, I don't know how you guys see that.
From my perspective, I don't want to say I agree with you, but my attitude when also when hiring people has been I look for their attitude and not really their knowledge. So it's how they talk, are they humble, are they willing to be open, what are they willing to share, how do they, because in one or two interviews, I mean, like if you do it also face to face, you get to learn a lot more than like this about how they treat others. Mm-hmm. Around them, and that is those were the key markers that most of the times that I was looking for.
And then
I mean, you need to have some basic skills of course, but that was always secondary.
Usually on the job, right? I mean, of course, I mean, yeah, not everyone is going to be able to learn from scratch or anything, but if someone has like some sort of skill gap somewhere,
you know, you can give them a chance. And but yeah, if personality wise it doesn't match, then it's going to be game over pretty quick, I think.
So I tend to agree with this, but I think there is a catch on this, right? I actually experienced this the last past month. The thing is, totally agree. Like, hire the person that matches these values. You like it. You like to drink a beer with, be in a sailing boat and crossing the Atlantic with. Like, that's the right thing. Because the technical part, or they will learn, but they will learn with the condition that the company is willing to invest, give them feedback, make sure that they are going to the right direction or wrong direction, right? And I think a lot of sometimes people forget that actually requires work as well to bring people to the technical level, to next level. Mm-hmm. And they tend to basically hire them because they match everything, but then they forget, like, oh, they will learn, but then they never do. And then you actually also don't get to have something, because the example that Michiel gave with his friend who was a cook, like, I would be totally useless on a boat, especially because I don't even know how to cook. So then, you know, if nobody is also taking the time to help me, I'm definitely not going to be of any use. And then becomes also the other side of the problem, right? It's like, okay, you are a nice guy, but yeah, you bring nothing to the table, and I'm not willing to help you to bring anything to the table. And I think then becomes detrimental as well.
But I think that's the other side. So it's the values, because if they're not aligned, it will be a problem in the future. But I agree with the other part. It's about, you know, that people need to add something to the company from like day one. And the mistake we did in my previous company was we needed the people, a lot of people, and you can't find them. And so what do? So you hire people that are less suitable. And that was a big mistake, because basically you end up spending more time about, you know, coaching and helping these guys. But the best people in your organization are saying, what the hell are they doing? And I did some strategy sessions with them, and I asked them, okay, you know, imagine this situation. You come into the office on Monday, there's a piece of paper. And order on there said, hey guys, it was a great time, but sorry, we didn't make it. The company is bankrupt. And asked that the question was, what are the things that you miss most? Because these are like a core values. And, and what they say, it's about working with really good guys and having great projects, exciting projects. And we were hiring people that were not great guys. So this was basically not matching.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then we decided, okay, we will wait. And now they were talking internally to say, hey guys, we will be busy. It will be busy, very busy for the next months. But the people that will come aboard will be good guys. And they were saying that to each other, hey, that's no problem, because this is what we like.
One of the rules that I always had when doing these type of recruitments was, if you doubt for a single bit, then it's a no. And it's like, better do that. And there have been occasions several times where, like you explained, due to external circumstances, we saw the project, we need the manpower, you hire one or two people, and then it's like, it almost never turns out good.
I think we have various people interviewing, and if one person is in doubt, no way.
You don't give people the benefit of the doubt. I mean, that's like a virtue, right? Giving someone the benefit of the doubt. But when hiring people,
I would say with Watanhike, if the organization has the capacity to absorb that, then maybe you can do that. But if not, then maybe you're better off.
But I think it's the question. It's about doubt if it's the right person. It goes two ways, huh?
Yeah. Exactly.
I also decided not to hire people because I thought it would be not right for them.
Yeah.
And so I had this person, he was really in doubt. And I said, and we even made him an offer, and he was still in doubt. And I said, let's not do this.
Yeah.
Because it will not be good for you. Mm.
And if they're doubting, right? If they're doubting, it's like, yeah, also a big, yeah. It's also not, you don't want to have to convince people to come to your organization if they're in a lot of doubts, because then they can turn it around. It's like your fault. You made me. Well, that could be a consequence, but I mean, yeah, you promised me this and this, and then now it's not like this. It's like, well, you need to want to come.
Exactly. Yeah. They are not owning their responsibility of the relationship.
Yeah. So, Michiel, I went through your LinkedIn page, of course, to in preparation for this podcast. And there it says that you are a certified NLP master practitioner.
Oh, wow.
And I've read something about NLP, and I see actually some of my people in my network also doing this. But me personally, I have no clue what it is and what does it actually allow you to do. So could you maybe, I don't know if it has much to do with organizational clarity, but like I said, it triggered me to just ask you, like, what is it and what can you do with it?
NLP, it's neuro-linguistic programming, I think. When people hear this, you have people that right away say, oh, this is horrible because after your training, you will end your marriage and things like that. Exactly. And you have people that say, wow, this is the best, and they all want to become an NLP trainer. So I think NLP is, it's like a best practice about communication. And you can see it as, you know, these are like tools you can use to improve your communication. But I think more important, it's about how do you communicate with yourself and what is holding yourself back to do whatever you want. And I think this is, and that was also for me, personal reason for attending this NLP training. And it's really, for me, it was about, it was personal development, but also, there were things happening in my life that needed to give a place, and I could not move on. So,
yeah.
And I think NLP is about that. And of course, then you can still, use some of the, tools in the organization. And so coach other people what you have learned. But I think most important for me was its personal development.
Interesting. I'm going to take a look at it. You got my curiosity, so I'll definitely look at it.
Yeah, so you don't apply it in your day-to-day work in order to, motivate the team or to, you use it in your communication towards the team, or is it a pure personal thing where you get up in the morning and have a conversation with yourself, like, I want to achieve this or I want to change that? Or
are you manipulating us right now?
Exactly, yeah. Oh, you were manipulating me with the sailing, so... I think with all these things, it's like a tool bag. Eh? So I've done a lot. If you see the back, I have a lot of books here, and it's about improving yourself. And it's not, if you think, oh, this is the only thing, and I'm going to do everything I learn, because basically, usually when you have a training, you come back, and also in my company, say, oh, we've been on training again, so we'll find out what's new again. And it's all about balance, and I think you use the things, of all these training and methodologies and combine them and depending on the situation. So, yeah, I think, use it quite a lot. But
I actually have a similar feeling, like when these guys like Sylvester and Heek, like they said, like a Monday or a Tuesday, they say to me like, oh, I read this book over the weekend. And then it's like, oh, here we go. We're going to try something else that these guys read in the book. I mean... And to be fair, sometimes it's good suggestions and sometimes, they don't really work. But in general, it's definitely good to try new things and to educate yourself by reading books. And speaking of books, do you have maybe any book recommendation to the listener about the subject of today? Like any author titles?
I think I've got a few books, but I also hand out books. So a few books I'm missing, but I think... Books for me is the number one is about yourself and finding out what is your mission in life, what are the goals you want to achieve. Because if you know that, then you can steer your life. If you don't know, then you're just living and see. The first one is this one. It's a Big Five for Life, the secret about great leadership. It's about business context, but it's really. Really inspiring. So I think that would be my first tip. Yeah. But it's about yourself. I think the second tip I have, which is about more teams, is and you guys know the book as well. It's from Lencioni, The Five Frustrations of Teamwork. It's always good to have an understanding of that if you're in a team and you want to improve teamwork. Yeah. And I really like the book because I'm not a good reader unless it's a story. So it you need to read easy, not theoretics. And both of them are a story. And then the third one is more, okay, how to improve an organization. It's a scaling up. I think it's a well-known book. And this is, I think, to help you on the organizational side.
Great stuff. It doesn't help then, with all of our book individual book lists. It just like keeps on growing day by day.
Exactly. Yeah. But these are like different angles. Yeah.
What aspect of NLP you found most appealing that you chose to do NLP? Because I looked at it like maybe 5, maybe even 10 years ago. And I did read a bit on it, but I never pursued it in terms of like what you did with the training. And I find it quite interesting, but I'm curious, what about it? Why NLP? Because it's, like you said, you have also the techniques that are used there. You can also have other type of courses where you probably cover a bunch of those things. But
It's like best practice. So you have also the other has Stephen Covey is of course the 7 habits of leadership, and there's so much overlap in these. So, but for me, I got advice by a friend. He said he suggested this, and I know a lot of people they go to information evenings and then think about it for weeks, months, years, and I just registered. So I had no clue. So I did read a book, but I think for me, reading a book is not good enough. It's about also, and I always go in a hotel outside. So I really, don't sleep at home. And then it's a training. So it's really, for me, that works much better than a book. I think NLP, like I said, you can maybe some go more into the techniques, but this was also about yourself, what's holding your back, and that can be, it's quite intensive, because if you have, it's a group of 40 people, these people have, lived a lot of things and struggle with quite intense subjects. So, But what appealed, and this is also in this the first training, at the end, it's about what is the thing you want to do in life most. And it was like in Hawaiian, Hoka Poka, I don't know the name. And this is more about, okay, don't think about it, but let's come out what you think is the thing. And the whole training was, for me, was going quite well. But then I was sitting there, nothing was coming. And I said, but then they said, no, don't worry. So you have your eyes closed. And then for me, suddenly it happened, because then I saw a boat in my mind. And then I heard waves against the boat. And for me, right away, it was clear. And that was, I want to cross the ocean with my family.
Nice.
And then I'm a pretty practical guy. So then I asked, okay, what date? So, and then, came 2008, which was like 2 years time. So I had not much sailing experience, so I had to do a lot of work. But for me, it was two things. From a personal level, things settled, and on the other one is gave me again, what do I want to achieve?
All right, I'm sold.
Yeah, thank you for transparency.
Let's get a 4 scouts a vessel. Let's. Let's get some sailing, and Heek, you can man the barbecue, and then we'll do the rest.
As long as a barbecue, I can do it.
But cool. Then we have to wait for better weather.
Yeah, probably.
That's okay.
Yeah. Hey, right. Good sailors are made in bad weather.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a good one, so that's okay.
All right. So, Michiel, I want to thank you very much. The book recommendations, I think our listener will definitely help the listener to improve themselves and then hopefully also their organizations. So, I think that's a very nice addition here. I don't know, Panche and Heek, do you may also have some book recommendations for the listener?
I will leave for the future. I think the ones that Michiel recommended, they are also on my list.
Yeah, well, if you have some other books, let me know, because yeah, I'm always interested.
Well, we spoke about change, so I'll just briefly just mention The Leading Change and Our Iceberg is Melting by John Carter. They're in the same style as Who Moved My Cheese. So those are kind of about how to inspire people for change, maybe.
All right. Well, there you have it. All right, Michiel, again, thank you very much for being here. I definitely learned a thing or two here. And Henk, Panche, thank you guys as well.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
It was a pleasure.
Yes. Yeah.
And I would like to thank the listener, of course, as well. If you guys have any suggestions or remarks or questions for any of us, then please feel free to either send us a message on anchor.fm with the message button, or you can always, of course, send an email to podcast@fourscouts.nl or Twitter us at @fourscouts. All right. So that wraps it up for today's episode, Navigating the Organizational Clutter with Michiel Toes. And I'll see you guys on the next one. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Peace.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Scoutcast, Roasting Marshmallows, with your host, Rolf Serd. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit fourscouts.nl and on Twitter @fourscouts. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a review and subscribe, and we'll catch you next time on Scoutcast, Roasting Marshmallows.